never graduates. So make plans with family and friends to spend fall Saturdays in Annapolis with Navy football. Order your season tickets today. Join us at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium for a game day atmosphere like no other. The best way to ensure tickets to all our games, including Delaware and Air Force, is to become a season ticket holder. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by logging on to NavySports.com.
Celebrate summer and support the Boys and Girls Clubs at Safeway's Barbecue Battle, June 25th and 26th on Pennsylvania Avenue. This great family event features the nation's best barbecue, along with 30 great rock, R&B, and blues bands, plenty of free food samples, celebrity chefs, contests, prizes, and more. Easy to get to by Metro. Call 202-828-3099 or visit bbqdc.com. See you at the barbecue. Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Commerce Department Secretary Gary Locke.
It's not easy, for instance, on one of the first pilots that we did on acquisition reform, to say that, okay, instead of we're going to buy separate licenses for software for each of the computers, we're going to pool them all, we're going to buy them together and buy them basically in bulk. That first example, with just a limited number of computers, we got an 88% reduction in cost.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about, are your federal benefits safe? And to join us in that discussion is Barry Rock. Barry, I'm going to ask you to fill in your vitals. And Ed Zurndorfer. All righty, Ed, I know you're vitals, fellow seminar presenter, moderator of Fed Soup, retired Fed, prolific writer, and a good guy. Good morning, Ed. Up, Ed. Okay, Ed's coming on. Hope Barry's coming on, and we'll get this show on the road because my name is Bob Lines, and although I might be moderating the show, I'm a tax finance type and not a benefits type. But Barry is, I believe, a president or vice president of a New York chapter of NARF. And you just heard what Ed does. Ed is, I've known Ed, boy, going on 20 years, and we do seminars together, D.C. and around the country. And he is also with FEND, and he writes articles for FEND, and he moderates their website called Federal Soup, federalsoup.com. For those of you all that don't know what it is, you can go in and ask it questions, and it's somewhat like a blog, too. People add their comments to it and the like, and Ed knows his financial side, and he knows his benefit side as well. Barry, I've had the pleasure of just talking to him on the phone, and seems like an energized person to make sure that the federal benefits are not lost in lobbying Congress not to cut them deeply or not to cut them at all. We're going to be talking about the high three versus the high five. Probably going to talk about some Medicare issues, or, you know, to be or not to be, so to speak, with regards to Medicare. And so should be very informative show. And as well, you can call in as we go. We're 202-465-3080. Okay. Barry, you on the phone? Ed, you on the phone? Ed? Okay. Nobody's on the phone. Just me. Anyway, we're at 202-465-3080. When somebody comes, unless you want to ask me a tax or finance question, I can talk about converting voluntary contributions to the Roth, and converting traditional IRAs to the Roth without regards to losing too much in taxes, or maybe losing none in taxes if you do it right. And talk about the thrift, talk about you can't talk too much about the Roth ESP, although we did have a show on about 2 months ago with regards to that. And we had the director of the thrift on, as well as the second in command, Tom, and they talked about the TSP Roth as much as they could. It's a good show. It was in, I believe it was April 24th or April 21st, and it can be accessed via our website. Our website is nitpinc.com. nitpinc.com. And you can listen to this show, as well as archive shows back to years ago. And we have each week a different type of discipline on, whether it's financial planning, legal planning, might be psychological, might be health, but all very informative shows. As well, on that same website homepage on the left-hand side, Tammy Flanagan is an NITP speaker as well. More importantly, she's the director of benefits for NITP, and all of her GovExec columns are archived. I'm talking about 5.5 years. So for those of you all that don't read her column, you probably should, and it's free. You don't have to pay for any subscription. Okay, but now we've got Ed on. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Bob.
Okay, so I've given them your vitals, and you and I are the only ones on right now. So the topic is, federal benefits, are they safe? And I believe you and Barry were talking while I was trying to get here. Was there one point we want to start off with?
Well, one point we definitely need to talk about is the current status of what's happening in Congress regarding our benefits. And I don't know if you mentioned as part of my vitals that I retired from federal service.
I did.
And so I'm definitely looking ahead here to see what's going to happen to my benefits. And I think the one issue we talked about, Barry mentioned the fact that August 2nd is a deadline regarding the issue of the federal debt ceiling. And apparently some of our benefits are tied to what's going to happen regarding what Congress intends to do with the debt ceiling. Federal retirees have a lot to be concerned about regarding what the future of their benefits will be, as well as employees. Employees need to be concerned, both CSRS and FERS, regarding what's going to happen to their ultimate retirement benefits in the future. I mean, one issue that Barry and I talked about was the possibility that instead of using the high 3 average salary that they currently use in the calculation of the CSRS and FERS annuities, they may switch to a high 5 average salary calculation.
Could I ask you two questions? One, let me just go back. Is there anything that's been whispered or in writing that somebody that is retired would lose some of their annuity?
I have not heard about anything about making anything in terms of benefits reductions retroactive. In other words, whatever you have right now, you would keep. It's just a matter of, in the future, those employees who are going to be retiring in the future. There was also the issue of there was a bill introduced in Congress that starting, I think, new employees who are hired after January 1st, 2013, wouldn't get any type of defined benefit plan. There would be no FERS annuity. Only such an employee would receive once he or she retires is the TSP and Social Security. There would be no defined benefit plan, a retirement plan portion of their retirement, which is very significant because this is one of the real benefits of both CSRS and FERS is that you get the defined benefit pension, which is the guaranteed portion of your retirement. No matter how long you live, you're going to be guaranteed a check from the federal government in the form of this pension.
Ed, let's for those of that don't, I won't say understand, but a defined benefit is something that your employer provides you with very little dollar input. So a CSRSer, I'm sure they know what a defined benefit is. That's their pension / annuity that they would get for life based on their high 3 in years in service. Now, the FERS folks get it as well, and I believe it's not uncommon for FERS people to be unaware that they get it, that they would have to rely upon Social Security and the amount of money that they put into the TSP when, in fact, they do get an annuity as we speak. But you mentioned that might be, and let's underline the word might, be something that they're looking at. But how do they get theirs calculated basically the same way as CSRS? It's based on a high 3, correct?
That is correct.
Currently.
And your years of service.
Okay.
With one important difference. Under CSRS, you get approximately, for every year of service, you get 2% high three average salaries. So if you work 30 years for the federal government, and you retire to say sometime on or after your 55th birthday, you would get approximately 60%. Not exactly, it's about 56%, but we'll round it up a little bit here. About 60% of your high three average salary. If you work the same number of years under FERS, 30 years, retired sometime between age 55 and 57, your so-called minimum retirement age, you would get 30% of your high three average salary. That's half as much.
But still, they would get something, because when I'm sure you've seen it in class, and people say, I'm really entitled to an annuity or a pension as well. And I'm sure you make their day when you go, you sure are.
That's exactly correct. What I tell everyone in class is one problem that no one in this class is ever going to face once he or she retires from federal service. And they say, what's that? You'll never run out of money. The federal government says no matter how long you live, you're going to be getting this guaranteed pension called an annuity, CSRS or FERS annuity, for the rest of your life with some inflation protection. And they say, well, is that important? I said, sure it is, because we're living longer now. It is possible that you could, when you retire from a company and all you have is a 401k plan, that you could outlive that 401k plan, because 401k plans, the thrift savings plan, are not defined benefit plans. They are defined contribution plans. And unlike a defined benefit plan with a defined contribution plan, there is no guarantee that you're going to have income for life from that plan.
So the definition then is it's how much you contribute to the plan and how much the employer puts in. But I think what you're saying is that's a pot of money. And you need to be careful not to take too much out of that pot of money.
That's exactly correct. It's not only you got to be careful how much you're taking out once you retire from this defined contribution plan like the TSP or 401k plan. It's also a matter of how well you're investing it, not only when you're working, but after you retire. When you retire from federal service, let's say, you have choices regarding what to do with your TSP, one of which, of course, is taking the money out. But whatever is left in the TSP, you need to keep it growing, because if you just let it sit there and not grow, it could, between inflation and high, let's say, higher interest rates and so on, this could cause your TSP to go down in value to the point that there may not be anything left, let's say, after 15 or 20 years.
Good point, Ed, but you know, sometimes that runs contrary to people's thinking, that if interest rates go up, how could a bond possibly go down, including a federal bond? Let's not talk about the G fund. Let's talk about the things outside the G. So if interest rates go up, of course, stocks are squeamish, and because the corporations will have to borrow and pay more for the borrowings. But more importantly, like the F fund is pretty much bonds, corporate and federal government. But how, if interest rates go up, how could possibly the value of a bond go down?
With a bond, there's an inverse relationship between bond prices and interest rates. If interest rates go up, bond prices go down. If interest rates go down, bond prices go up. And the reason for that is very simple. Bob, suppose as a stockbroker, I'm a licensed stockbroker, and I said to you, Bob, I got this great bond that's paying right now 4%, okay? Now, minimum investment is $10,000, $10,000. And you say, okay, I got the $10,000. I would love to buy that bond, Ed, because there's not too many places I can get a 4% return. I definitely can't get it at the bank, so I think I'll take you up on the offer, Ed. So if I sell you that bond, you pay $10,000, you would get a check from the bond issuer of $400. That's 4% of $10,000 a year, $400. Now, let's suppose around this time next year, interest rates have gone up, and that same bond I sold you, Bob, for $10,000, interest rates have gone up, and that same bond is now paying 5%, okay? And you say, you know what, I really don't like the idea of losing $100 a year, because if I bought that bond right now, I could get $500 a year, whereas right now I'm only getting $400 a year. I'll tell you what, could I sell that bond and then I could reinvest the money I'm getting and get and get a 5% interest rather than the 4%. I said, yeah, you could sell the bond, Bob, sell the bond, but I cannot guarantee you I'm going to get you $10,000. I mean, if I sold the bond today, if I can get 5% return, okay, why should somebody pay $10,000 if they're only getting 4%?
You got it. We actually have a caller. But to end that so that nobody jumps off the roof, if somebody holds that bond to maturity, they'd get their $10,000
back. They hold to maturity, but, okay. but it might be 20 years.
I'm with you, but we got Barry now. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning.
And now Ed and I have just been talking until we could bring the phone lines together. But could you give us your vitals? In other words, your title, and I told him where you're from, but I don't...
Right. I'm New York State President of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And we've been fighting this game now with the pension and the health plans and the COLAs now for at least a year. And we're concerned that most of our... focus has to be in trying to turn the Congress and the American public off the notion that everything's going to be all right if they only take away our health plans and lower our salaries, because we're the scapegoats.
Okay, now you're a retired Fed, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so is Ed.
Hey, Barry.
I'm not.
It's always nice to talk to a fellow federal retiree.
If I might jump in on something you were saying earlier with the current employees, yes, it's true that there is consideration of the high three to the high five, but I think the bigger part of the problem is that there is also a move afoot to raise the contribution of the current employees towards what would amount to a reduced pension.
Okay.
What sense would it be a reduced pension? Because my understanding, Barry, is the fact that they would
a high three to a high five is going to wind up a reduced pension.
Oh, I understand. Well, I thought you meant regarding the increased contribution that FERS employees are talking about. FERS employees raising the contribution, I believe, to 6% from the current 0.8%.
Right.
But the actual annuity, I mean, the way they calculate it would be the same way.
That's likely, but we don't even clearly know that. There's about four or five commissions going on, one headed by Vice President Biden. Mm-hmm. Another one, of course, was the Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Mm-hmm.
There's the commission, the Gang of Six. I think it's a Gang of Five now. There's a couple of others, and they all have different spins on what they want to do to be able to bring federal retirees and federal employees into line. To us, it's a scapegoating kind of situation, primarily because, frankly, we don't quite understand how they could be giving subsidies, hundreds of millions of dollars of subsidies to the big oil companies, to the agricultural community. We have 150 nations. They give hundreds of millions of dollars to many of whom who are not even our friends, but at the same time, they want to be able to bring down the deficit based upon cutting workers' salaries and benefits.
All right. If they cut it from the people leaving, not the people already retired. So if they go from 3-year high five from high three, what does that really mean to somebody? Let's say that their high five or their high three was $60,000. What does it mean to them from an annuity perspective if they go from 3 to 5? Is that a question we can answer easily?
Well, Ed Bob, probably be better doing that. I'm not familiar
well,
with the exact
I can
amount.
Tell you, Bob, under current conditions, if there's no pay increases, it means nothing.
Right. I was going to say that, but thank you, Ed.
Salaries for 5 years, like they're talking, well, there's one proposal to freeze federal pay for 5 years. It really means nothing because no one's getting pay increases. Well, of course, you got the step increases. People do get. I understand these employees still are eligible for step increases. So it definitely is going to have an effect because you know if you're going up your GS ladder, you know, supposedly every 1 to 3 years you're getting step increases. It could have an effect, and not a lot, but it will have some effect. But this is nothing new. This has been talked about for years.
Ed, if that person stayed on another year, so let's say this thing passes, and I'm not saying that it is, not remotely saying that, it's being discussed, but if that individual says, I either have to get out, I don't want to get out, but if I stay another year, would that kind of mitigate the change from the high three to the high five?
Let's say an average step increase. Let's say you're at the end of the GS ladder, GS whatever, 12, 13, 14. Let's say, and let's say a step increase might be $3,000. So that means that by foregoing the step increase, you're losing the extra by retiring early, you're losing the extra $3,000. So that's going to have, let's say, if you're FERS, you're talking about the extra $3,000 in the calculation, that could affect, that probably would affect your annuity by, let's say, about $300 to $500 a year for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I could jump in here just on qualifying one thing with the freeze in the salary, it seems like they would be suffering a loss, whether it be a high three or high five, because of the freeze in the salary for 3 to 5 years. That's 3 to 5 years. That's no income where their income would have been going up. So, in effect, that's a cut.
But that it's a cut against nothing, though. I mean, if everybody's frozen and the high three and the high five would be the same.
It's a cut against what the normal pay raises and increases would have been without the freeze.
I agree, but there's a freeze, and that would impact people that just came into government as well as the ones almost out the door, that they would lose that money. But I was talking more about their annuity than their current income. So if the annuity...
Well, that would affect their annuity. If they got no raises for 3 or 5 years, let's say it stayed at the high three, it would be a high three based upon that frozen salary, because they would not be getting any increases, which normally would have contributed to their high three.
I agree with you there, but if it isn't there, it isn't there. So
right.
What other things are they looking at besides? Would there be a greater contribution to the health insurance?
Well, can I just say one thing about this proposal to raise the FERS contribution from 0.8% to 6%. I think that's going to have a significant effect on the salaries as well, because Barry, you mentioned the pay increases and they're foregoing the government-wide pay increase and the county pay adjustments. There's not going to be any. There was none this year, none next year, and they're talking about for 5 years freezing salaries with no such increases. To raise the contribution level of a FERS employee from 0.8% to 6%.
That's awful.
That's what they're putting into. This is the employee contribution to FERS is going to have a tremendous effect on an employee's salary. People, when people say to me, I'm getting a 6% pay cut, I said, no, you're not. You're getting a 9 to 10% pay cut. Well, what they talking about, what is, they're going to make us pay 9 to 10%? No, because the amount of money that a FERS employee puts into the retirement system, the FERS Retirement Disability Fund, is after-tax dollars. It's not pre-tax. So they are, in fact, taking 9 to 10% of their salary, taxing it, and then with the remaining 6% after taxes, that's after federal and state taxes, they're putting it into the FERS retirement system. So that's going to have a significant effect on FERS employees' salaries.
Ouch.
And then when you add to it what you just raised with the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, they want to change that formula so that more of the premiums fall on both the active worker and, in this case, of course, we all have the same kinds of plans. It would affect the retiree as well.
Right. So the retiree then is going to have to kick in more. But the employee, they're talking about raising the rates for the employees as well in the contribution to the health care,
correct? That's
correct.
Right. Both the actives and the retirees all belong to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program.
You're talking about raising the current employee and retiree contribution of 28%.
Right.
It's going
to
be raised.
Right. Is there any whispering as to what it would be raised to?
There has been some proposals in terms of more or less like a voucher-type program where the government would give a straight contribution, subject, I think, to traditional inflation rather than medical inflation, and you pick your plan and you pay the difference.
Okay. Now, you all talked before we went on air. We've covered a couple bullet points, major bullet points. What else?
Barry and I discussed about the fact about what's happening with Medicare and the coordination between Medicare and federal employees' health insurance. In class, and I get questions all the time regarding what's the coordination between my federal employees' health insurance and Medicare? Do I really need Medicare, given the fact that I got such a great health insurance? I get this question so often. And, of course, you know, there's a proposal in Congress, Representative Paul Ryan's proposal to do away with the so-called traditional Medicare for those individuals 55 and younger, that when they turn 65, that the government would actually give out, vouchers, would give them $15,000 to go out and get their own health insurance and forget about what we have today when it comes to Medicare, the way it currently works.
Is this the acronym to be or not to be? Whether we get it or we don't get it, or what, if it's optional, what could it possibly be optional? Where you'd say, "Nah, I don't want to be. I'll get it on my own."
You mean in terms of what is currently right now?
Yeah. If they're going to change it.
Right now, federal retirees do not have to take Medicare. I mean, in terms of the Medicare, the different parts of Medicare, I mean, everyone agrees not to take Medicare Part A, which is the hospital insurance. It would be stupid because since federal employees have paid into Medicare since 1983, any federal retiree 65 and older is eligible for Medicare Part A at no cost. It's sort of been prepaid by paying the hospital insurance tax for at least 10 years. So that would be sort of a no-brainer. Everyone should enroll in Medicare Part A. The questions come up regarding Medicare Part B, which is a medical insurance, in which there is a monthly premium. And what does Medicare Part B pay for? Doctor services, outpatient service, medical equipment, things like that. This is a question that comes up all the time. Do I really need Medicare Part B because my doctor takes my insurance? What do I need Medicare Part B for? Why should I pay for it?
And now that becomes even more important if they're going to be increasing the FEHBP premiums. There will be a greater need and thought about picking up Medicare Part B. And by the way, while there's been a lot of press about it not affecting current retirees, there seems to be some conjecture about that Ryan's overall legislation is aiming also at killing President Obama's health care initiative that's already law. And within that has serious changes on Medicare Part B and Part D, the drug part, which is another story altogether. So it could even conceivably impact current retirees, despite the fact that the publicity is cut to the contrary.
Is Medicare B needs based?
Means premium. Means tested.
Yeah, is it the premium?
Yeah, yes, it is, and this is going to be a problem that many federal retirees are going to be facing because the rule is this: that the higher your income, the more you're going to pay in Medicare Part B premiums. It's been this way since 2006. Those retirees over age 65 whose income, well, currently is over, I think it's $85,000 a year. That's single, and those individuals who are married over $170,000 a year, they pay more than the current monthly premium for Medicare Part B, which currently I think is $110 a month. They would pay more in monthly premiums the more income they have over $85,000, $170,000 a year.
Okay, and when people talk about means testing, but a person in FERS has a little bit of an option to, once they go over and they get into this higher than those numbers that you mentioned, Dad, the next year, if their income goes down, then the Medicare premium goes down in the following year, correct?
That's correct. It's a year-by-year thing. Actually, like for this year, for 2011, the monthly premiums are based on an individual's income back from 2009. They look back the previous 2 years to see what a person's income was. And if for some reason that individual expects to have a much lower income in the current year, you can negotiate with Social Security what the Medicare Part B premium would be in the current year. For example, a person was married back in 2009, and God forbid their spouse passed away and they expect to have lower income this year, or they got divorced and they have less income. The monthly premium can be renegotiated based on facts and circumstances.
Right. What the dilemma is going to be for those who are approaching 65 and considering Part B is they may be in a health plan that, you know, in the federal service that gets too costly, and they chose not to join Medicare Part B when they were first eligible. The difficulty with that is that while Medicare Part B is voluntary, if you don't take it when you're first eligible, there is a 10% per year penalty for life.
Penalty of the premium?
Of the premium, yes.
Okay.
So if you're out 3, 4, let's say 5 years, that's a 50% penalty over what the premium would be at that particular time for life.
So there has to be a financial edge to this. It isn't just the coverage. It's if you don't do it, what are you going to pay if you decide that you need it? And like you say, 5 years, let alone 10 years, that'd be pretty rough, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
The question I get so often in class, Bob and Barry, this is the question that comes up all the time. If I have federal employees' health insurance, why do I have to spend, okay, let's say average in current $1,200 a year, $100 a month, why do I got to pay that if my doctor, my hospital accepts my federal employees' health insurance? What is the purpose of signing up for Medicare Part B then? That's the question I'm getting so often.
Well, there are a number of benefits on the Medicare side. One, Medicare sets the rates, and most often the doctors who accept that Medicare rates means that as a Medicare Part B participant, any co-payments and deductibles are waived.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a direct saving there because co-payments and those kinds of fees can, over the course of a year, depending upon your health, mount up pretty quickly. So it kind of offsets that $1,200 that you're talking about. Just by waiving those co-payments and deductibles and then having Medicare set the rates. In other words, if the doctor says, I want $1,000 for a particular procedure,
mm-hmm.
and they submit the bills to, you know, of course they participate with Medicare. Medicare sets the rate, let's say, for instance, at $800. Well, then $800 becomes the fee. They pay the 80%. The plan is only going to pay 20%. And waiving the co-payments and deductibles, you would have no out-of-pocket costs generally, as opposed to staying just with your FEHBP and probably having to be exposed to those co-payments and deductibles and a higher rate to begin with.
Barry, with regards to your membership, you have a conference. Was it yesterday or is it coming up? Sorry.
It's coming up on Wednesday.
Okay. And the conference is on FEHB?
The FEHB and the need or lack of Medicare Part B. Tammy is going to be in with us. We have someone from the Medicare Rights Center, and the entire day is going to be almost like a one-on-one. We have about 100 participants, not necessarily with specific issues, but raising the questions, why do I need it? What does it offer? Is it going to help me? One of the things we're going to be trying to point out is there's no longer one size fits all. It depends on somebody's, again, income level, because it will affect the Medicare Part B premiums. It's going to affect what Congress does with the FEHBP plans, with their pension plans are concerned. So there's a much more heightened need to take a serious look one-on-one on that kind of an issue.
Okay, you're doing this good work. After the conference, is any of the information going to be available on the web, or can somebody, I mean, somebody was kind enough to send me the outline. The outline's very descriptive.
Yes, we're going to have this on our New York State website, and you can pick that up at www.narfeny.org. Once again, www.narfeny.org. And we'll be posting that probably beginning Thursday.
Great. That's a lot of work to do if it's Wednesday. You're going to be up all night, huh?
Well, most of the stuff we've pretty much got kind of organized, other than, specific issues that become common to everybody. So we've already been working that kind of area to try and get that up ASAP.
Okay, and this would benefit people not only retired but currently working.
Right. We're working with both. We have both current active employees as well as retirees participating, so their questions probably will be a little bit different.
Barry, if I could just interject something regarding some of the other issues that you may want to discuss on Wednesday regarding Medicare. Some of the questions I get in class all the time. One question is, if I have enrolled in an HMO like Kaiser, is it really necessary to sign up for Medicare Part B, because my HMO, I might have a copayment when I go to the HMO of, say, a couple hundred, maybe $10, $15. Why should I spend so much money on Medicare Part B each year when, in fact, I go to the HMO and I might have a very, very minimal amount of out-of-pocket costs?
Well, that's true. Again, it becomes an individual decision. For instance, many HMOs are regional restrictive. If you live in New York, mm-hmm. you can only go to the doctors in New York, but mm-hmm. Medicare is nationwide. So if you are a snowbird or you go on vacation, you become, Medicare Part B will cover you, where you might not be able to get that same kind of coverage through your HMO.
Okay, another question comes up quite often is, I'm planning to retire overseas. There is no Medicare coverage overseas. Is it really worth my time to sign up for Medicare Part B when, in fact, I'm going to be living overseas the rest of my life?
Again, it's an individual decision. If that's the case, then you're not going to be wanting a HMO either. You're probably going to want one of the fee-for-service type plans that may be covering. Not all of them cover the foreign ones completely.
Mm-hmm.
And you better be pretty sure you're not coming back, huh?
I cite that example, Bob, all the time. Don't say you'll never come back. You never know. You may have to come back to the States for a medical procedure. I had a client who retired from federal service at age 63, moved to Italy. Didn't sign up for Medicare Part A because it's free. Decided, no, I really don't need Medicare Part B. Why should I pay the monthly premium? Because I'm going to be living in Italy. Well, at age 70, he got some problems with his eyes. To make a long story short, he needed cataract surgery, and he could not find an ophthalmologist in Italy he trusted. And he came back to the States. He had Blue Cross Blue Shield and ended up paying $1,000 out of pocket because it was an outpatient procedure, and Blue Cross Blue Shield didn't pay for everything. Had he had Medicare Part B, he would have paid nothing out of pocket. So don't say never, ever, you know, when it comes to your health. You never know.
That's the great crapshoot that really all of us, depending upon what our income level is and how the pension system dust settles and how the health care settles, is Medicare Part B going to be there as we understand it now? Who knows how it's even going to change? And that's the great unknown at this point. But assuming those things don't change that much, there is no one size fits all, and as Ed points out, never say never, because you may. To me, the simplest answer, and this is regardless of income or regardless of what health plan you have, I look at Medicare Part B for everybody as insurance. You buy insurance for the eventual possible need. You hope it'll never happen. It's, you know, but again, it depends on your ability to pay for it and what your needs are.
I agree. That's the whole idea of insurance, is you're paying a relatively smaller amount of money to protect yourself against a financial catastrophe. You're transferring risk. And I agree wholeheartedly that that Medicare is insurance. That's what it's designed for, to protect yourself against the catastrophic health care costs that you might incur after age 65. And, you know, I always tell individuals, you know, that Medicare is probably one of the most popular programs around. I have never heard from a senior citizen, oh, what a horrible program, what a waste of money, you know. I mean, the people are in the hospital for a month, 2 months, 3 months. They run up costs galore. There's no way that the average senior citizen could afford to pay for a 3 to 6 month stay in a hospital, multiple times, no less.
All right. When you all were talking before we got on air, were there any other hot buttons? Any talk of raising the taxation rate on Social Security?
No, but there's talk about raising the full retirement age. That's in the talking stages right now. Right now, the full retirement age for people born after 1960 is age 67. There's talk of raising it, I believe, to 69, which means that those individuals who were born, let's say, after I think they're talking about those individuals born after 1985, they were talking about it. Oh, they still could get their Social Security at age 62, but at a much higher penalty. So that's the issue regarding Social Security.
Would that be just for somebody that was way off from it? I mean, you got a large amount of baby boomers heading into that sweet spot now. Is there any discussion about raising the retirement age for those?
I have not heard of any. Although one of the questions I get in class is, what does Congress intend to do with the offsets, the windfall elimination provision, and the government pension offset that affects CSRS employees? Is Congress intend to do anything with that? And I say probably not. They're going to keep it the way it is. They're not going to change that.
Barry, have you heard any rumblings about the baby boomers heading into the promised land and having the door shut?
Well, there's two items. There's one, I think, in the Bowles-Simpson proposals that want to raise the age of eligibility to 69 for Social Security. I've heard some talk about even 70 from other commissions, but that's one area. And the other area that we're not really putting enough emphasis on is the cost of living. They do want to make some serious changes in the cost of living procedure. The Bowles-Simpson has got their proposal, and there are a couple of other things basically that would seriously cut the cost of living adjustments downward. The one you see most popularly is one that would, over a 10-year period, reduce the COLAs by about 3%. And that sounds like a small number, but when you relate that into real dollars, it's something really meaningful. Just to give you a little sidebar on the cost of living, as you're probably aware, the cost of living adjustment has been frozen for the past 2 years because the inflation has not gone up sufficiently. And federal retirees, well, everybody is probably going to get, there seems to be heading in the direction of getting a cost of living for 2012. The problem with that is that because of the freeze in having to pay any increased premiums, Medicare Part B does go up every year regardless, but it's waived for those who don't receive any cost of living. Consequently, most or a good part of our component is paying $96.40 now, even though Medicare Part B is $115 now and probably will go over $120 in January. So they're going to have to leap from the $96.40 to whatever the fee is in January 2012. And it doesn't look optimistic enough to think that we're going to get a large enough cost of living to cover that cost. Bottom line, many retirees will learn that they're going to get a cost of living, but most, if not all of it, is going to be eaten up by the Medicare Part B increase in the premiums.
There's only really, in my opinion, one portion of a federal retiree's retirement that really can keep up what I call true inflation, and that is their TSP, because they got to keep they can control which funds they can have they have the money in, the CS or I fund, the three stock funds, or the two bond funds. And stocks over the years have kept up with inflation, bonds have not, and for that reason that retirees today and tomorrow have to keep their TSP growing. Even after when they retire, they can't play it conservative once they retire, have all of their money in the bond funds. That traditionally has been the case because, you know, we were taught when we were younger that as you get close to retirement, you start getting conservative with your investments. Well, that may have been true, for my opinion, for the older generation, maybe our parents, grandparents. But because we're living longer today, we've got to take a different approach on this. We have to keep our the investments that we do have control over, our talking about our retirement accounts that we do have control over, namely our defined contribution plans, we have to keep them growing and having the majority of it invested in the stock funds.
Barry, you represent a significant number of people in your district, if you will. Are they financially savvy to look at comments like what Ed just said, to realize, as was once said on here on the show, inflation does not stop at retirement's door?
Well, so. I would like to think, because we are were federal workers and the federal retirees, that we have a better handle on our finances. But the reality is that we're probably not any smarter than anybody else in the general public. And that becomes an issue not only because of that, especially as we age. I'm not sure that as we age we make the same kind of financial decisions that we would have made when we were younger. But when you, even if you are, and you're depending upon being a good mover of your finances to the best of your ability, you're kind of swimming upstream when you think of the fact that there are moves afoot to cut your retirement, cut your health plans, cut your Medicare, cut your COLAs. Every time you turn around to try and, keep yourself at least level, right now there is a move afoot to target federal employees and federal retirees. And what we as an organization are suggesting, active employees, their spouses, their adult children, and all of the retirees do, is to be able to raise their voice by getting to our national website and or telephone numbers, and I'd like to give you those for the Capitol switchboard and the White House, to express your, not only your concern but your opposition to this scapegoating.
Okay, so how do they get those?
Okay, the Capitol switchboard, the telephone number there, and I'll give it twice, 1-866-220-0044. Once again, 1-866-220-0044. When you get on the line, tell the person who your congressperson is, and they will connect you with that office. Do the same thing with your senator. Same telephone number. Make a second call to each of your two senators. The White House telephone number is 1-888-225-8418. Again, 1-888-225-8418. And our national website is www.narfe.org. To repeat that once more, www.narfe.org. Let your congressmen, let your senators, let the White House know that you have no problem about paying your fair share and taking the sacrifice that has to be, but it's got to be fair, it's got to be balanced, and it's got to be all-inclusive.
Okay, and this would apply both to folks that are retired as well as current federal employees.
Absolutely. The legislation and the proposals that are coming down the pike affect both components.
I would say maybe even more so the ones currently employed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's good that you cover both sides. Because I sometimes think there's a misconception with your group that it's just for retired feds, but it clearly is not, and the name indicates it is not, right?
Right, absolutely. We changed the name, and we changed our methodology. It's more than 10 years ago now that we were originally a retirees organization, but we recognized then that if we're to really be of help, there's a point long before you retire that we want to be of service for.
How would you join your organization if the listeners were unaware?
Well, there again, go to that same national website, www.narfe.org, and you will find a place on that front page to be able to join and to sign up and find out a great deal more about what we're all about.
All righty. All righty. Now we're coming to a slow landing here. Did you all have anything else on the proverbial drawing boards?
Well, I'd just like to just follow up what Barry said here, and that if you're an employee, you definitely should be attending retirement seminars or mid-career planning seminars, even new employee seminars, for that matter, for new employees, to understand how benefits are changing, will be changing, and how they're going to affect you, because it's very important that you keep informed regarding what's going on. And to attend the seminar, I know, just speaking for our organization, Bob, NITP, we really keep up with all the changes, and we give the class participants in these seminars all the information they really need to know regarding how their benefits are computed and how they're going to be, might be affected with future legislative changes coming about.
And besides the benefits, we look at finance, legal, health, psychology, and anybody that goes to a seminar can email us for the rest of their natural life if they so desire, no charge, and get questions answered. So it isn't necessarily just here it is in class and see you around the beach. It's as long as somebody might like. And our email address is, let's do this one, foryourbenefit@nitpinc.com. For your benefit at NITPINC, and that's what it's for your benefit. Ooh. All right, we've got 1 minute, guys. Final comments?
I would say that this is very important given what's happening going on in the current legislative world, and I think more changes are coming, and really encourage employees and retirees to keep up with all the information that we've presented to them and all the websites and organizations like NARFE. They only can help.
Barry?
Well, let me just wind it up this way. With for those of you who either can't call or need another access or have difficulty talking, if you use our website nationally, we have a pre-setup, pre-screened kind of letter that you can just click on, you know, type in your name, and it'll get directly to your congressman and senator.
Okay, we're going to get the axe here, or the hook, I guess. Anyway, Barry, thanks for being on the show. And Ed, thanks for the last minute being on the show. Always a pleasure, Ed, and now a new pleasure with Barry. Thanks for listening, y'all, and we'll be on next week talking about college funding with Steve Lingle. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.